League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Hello and welcome back to the Sunday Podcast. I'm Ollie Lum, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Matt Seddon. On this week's episode, we spoke to Team New Balance Manchester coach, Steve Vernon.
We spoke to Steve about how he first got into coaching and what it's like to be head of the Team New Balance Manchester group. Enjoy.
Hi guys, how you doing?
Yes.
Hi Steve.
Hang on. There we go. I'm in.
Hi. Thanks for doing this. Welcome to the podcast, I guess.
Yeah. Thank you, guys. I've been listening to a few now, so I'm enjoying it very much.
Oh, good stuff. Great to hear. If you don't mind, we'll just get straight into it, if that's okay with you.
Yeah, absolutely fine. Let's crack on. Okay,
great. Kind of first off, just wanted to ask, you had a great career yourself as an athlete, but did you always know you were going to get into coaching? And when did that sort of start to become a reality, I guess?
Yeah, it's a good question. I suppose I was always a student of the sport, all the way through, even though I was, a competing athlete. I love reading into it. I've got every biography, autobiography out there, and I read about everything I could, really. And I was always somebody that would quiz coaches. I remember from... I was very lucky to have a fantastic coach in Dave Turnbull at Stockport Harriers, who's been coaching from club level through to international level for, 20, 30 years now. But when I was in America for a short while, and when I was at Loughborough, and when I was down in St. Mary's, whenever there was an opportunity to quiz athletes, quiz other coaches and learn and understand the sport better, I did it. I suppose without realizing, I was doing it because I wanted to be a better athlete. But also, I started to realize later on in my career that I wanted to be a coach and be the best possible coach I could be.
100%. Was there was there a crossover at all when you were still competing with coaching? I'm not really sure, if I'm honest.
Yeah, there is. It's an interesting story actually, where it was 2014 and I'd started coaching Johnny Mellor in the September of 2013, and we were at the Birmingham Indoors, the Grand Prix, and Johnny had just finished second behind Andy Vernon in the 3K Indoors and was trying to get the World Indoor qualifying time. And I remember arriving there with him, and I'd won the National. So the National Cross Country's on the Saturday. Mm. And I'm going with Johnny to try and get a World Indoor qualifier on the Sunday. And everywhere I went, people were saying, well done to me. And, even in the core room. And I thought, today's about Johnny. And For me, I realised that day that I couldn't do both, or I didn't want to do both. Some coaches do both, but so I ran the North. I think I ran the National or the Northern 12 stage a week or two later. That was it. I did that for the club because I promised them, and then that was it. Really, I mean, don't get me wrong. I didn't want a big retirement or anything. Want to run or always a runner. So I still run and occasionally pin a number on when I. At local fell race or to help the club out. But that was it, 2014 March, when I decided this is it, I'm going to be a coach now.
Yeah.
Interesting you say about you were a student of the sport, reading biographies, you like questioning coaches and stuff, because I've always thought there's almost two types of athlete. There's probably more, but just generically, you get the ones who are like that, and then you also get the ones who are just, they don't want to know anything else about it. They just want to do what their session is. And that's how they perform best, if you like.
Yeah.
It's interesting, your pathway sort of, that's what, led you into coaching almost.
Yeah, and I've got that in the group now. I've got athletes that just want to turn up, know what they're doing, crack on, and then have a completely separate life. And then I also have, athletes, for example, Johnny Mellor, who, earns a living out of his own personal coaching company, coaching... I shouldn't say just recreational. Some of them are really, really good high club standard athletes. But yeah, everyone's different, and that's the art of coaching. It's, I suppose, it's applying the science to the athlete you've got in front of you, their personality type, and and what they want out of the sport. So yeah, it's not the way everyone does it, but it's the way I did it. And you know, I still spend an obscene amount of money each year on books and autobiographies, and you know, so much to the point where I'm seeking out real old school collector's items that are really hard to get hold of, you know. So, but I'll always be that way, and I'll always love to read about other athletes, you know, and not only from a coaching point of view, but just athletes' journeys really interest me, you know.
I think it's interesting. Sounds like you never stop learning, really. Even coaching wise, you're always open to hear new things. As some coaches can be a little bit set in their way. Do you have a preference for an athlete? So do you find it easier to coach an athlete who, like you said, just wants to turn up, train? They don't really like follow the competition too much. They just want to focus on themselves. Or do you prefer to coach someone who's like a little bit more invested in the sport itself?
Do you know what? It has to be interesting. I think, you know, I like the challenges of both. You know, there's times where an athlete might be too invested and thinking about things too much and reading letsrun.com every single day and scrolling through Twitter for hours on end. You know, that's not healthy. And there has to be a balance. But also, you know, there's certain athletes that don't even know who's in the heat till I tell them, like, day before a major championship, say no names. But, you know, that's it. And athlete, the biggest thing that I've learned about coaching and being a leader of a team is that everyone's different, and you're coaching individuals, and you've got to bring the best out of those people based on their personality type. And I think a lot of my reading as well is around leadership and management books. And there's not many of them from running leaders. You know, there's a few, but there's a lot from other sports, from football to American football to, you know, there's loads out there. And so I get a lot from that. And that's, again, that's why I'll talk to people and quiz people. 4 or 5 years ago, I persisted in annoying Tony Minicello and went and spent a day with him. And, you know, what a lot of distance running coaches won't think to themselves, I can't learn anything from, you know, a heptathlon coach, but I learned a lot from Tony and you know, the people, like, you know, listening to stuff from Fuzz Ahmed, the high jump coach, because he knows how to coach people as well as the high jump. And those skills are hard to find, and it takes a long time to develop them, because, you know, you boys have both seen it, as there's so many talented athletes out there, but it's top 2 inches that really make the difference. And I think that's what I've found is big part of my role is not just applying the coaching knowledge and the physiology, it's getting into people's heads to get the best out of themselves.
I think that's right. Yeah, it's not just the training. It's, like you say, your relationship with them and how that benefits them.
Yeah, 100%.
Decent. So you kind of mentioned, like, your role there with, like, dealing with the people. I kind of noticed, I think it might be in your Twitter bio or maybe Instagram, you kind of, your role at New Balance Manchester is not just the coach, you're the manager actually as well.
Yeah.
And I just kind of wanted to know what that role actually entails and what that looks like on a day-to-day basis.
Well, I started off in New Balance at the end of 2014, and my role was 2 days a week coaching and then 3 days a week within the marketing team, and specifically managing the Olympic Island, the kit and everything that went around, because they were fully sponsored by New Balance then. The Irish team. So that was leading into the 2016 games. And there was a lot of activation and projects around that, you know, that we used. And yeah, so, and then that's changed over time, where I'm still, you know, within the marketing department, I still get involved in various things with the London Marathon, etc. But the focus is more on the team. But the team is a brand. And, you know, it's really challenging, because this was a dream to set up something that's similar to the American model. But the money that goes into distance running and distance running teams in the USA is very much different than what athletes and teams get over here. So at the beginning, I had to beg, borrow and steal, you know, and having a brand and managing the team to negotiate free stuff from nutrition and products to gym usage to facility usage, you know, all those things we didn't have a budget for. So I started managing the team, managing the social media around it, managing the activation that we have with a lot of our retailers, from, you know, small specialist independent running stores to huge online running store, you know, running sell, you know, running distributors like ProDirect and Sport Shoes, etc. So yeah, it's, I manage a lot of that. And also when you're managing a team of international athletes, you're dealing with agents, managers, travel, everything. It's not just, you know, the day-to-day coaching. And I think some of the guys take the mick out of me at New Balance and say, all I do is hold a stopwatch, but I wish that was all I did, you know. And there's a lot goes around. And also the team is got a lot of international foreigners, we call them. And you're dealing with their governing bodies as well, managing what they do and making sure, you know, from simple things like the effects that Brexit's had on a number of our athletes. And so that's all part of the day-to-day management, which is a big part of what I do. And sometimes it's challenging because it does take away from the coaching. But if you're going to run a professional team, at the moment, it's just me. I'm very lucky to have the support of New Balance, but also the athletes. But it's a one-man band, you know.
How much do you think that kind of helps the athletes? Because I think Matt and I had the discussion about when athletes are trying to train and kind of train only, but then in like today's kind of social media world, they've got to be busy kind of managing their own social media and managing their own contracts with brands and agents and things like that. So how much, I guess, blow your own trumpet here, because like how much does that help the athletes being able to just concentrate on their training?
So it's a very hard world right now because, you know, certain brands and certain people look at followers. Mm. And, you know, there's people out there with over 100,000 followers that are the social influencers that are 18 minute part run people. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's great. There's a place for them in the market, you know, and there's millions of part runners. So it's very hard for elite athletes to market themselves. And some of them, social media doesn't come naturally to them, you know. And I always say, don't force it. If it's something you enjoy and something you want to do, do it. Don't feel pressured to do it. You know, let your legs do the talking, because results, social media, it takes care of itself. If you run fast, the people will promote you. And, you know, so you see it. You see some of the top athletes in the world that are fantastic on social media, but you also see others that you rarely get a tweet or an Instagram out of and do the odd bit for the brand, but it doesn't come natural to them. And distance running is full of, you know, endurance running is full of extroverts, introverts, all types of people. And social media is tough, but I don't push on any of my guys to do it. It's up to them. You know, and we're not a brand that puts pressure on them to do it. It needs to be organic and natural to them. So I often, you can see when posts are forced by people, and you know, it's a tough environment for athletes in the UK to get free kit for starters, and then to get money is really, really challenging. But that's why Team New Balance Manchester started by providing a house, because you know, athletes, there isn't the budget there to hand out money unless you're a real, you know, top athlete. And but we knew that coming out of college or coming back from America, people needed that transition and help. And so the first thing, we spent every penny we had on the budget on getting a house, because we knew that was the cost. And then, you know, athletes can then concentrate totally on training, a few part-time jobs, some of them are students, and the majority, I'd say there's only a couple of athletes in Team New Balance Manchester that don't need to work, the rest of them work. And because, you know, they're not getting an income from the running, and especially in this COVID last 12 months, you know.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I knew there was a house, but I didn't know that it started, you know, with a house for the New Balance guys. And when you think of it now, like, that seems like almost a no-brainer, because like you say, it still allows them to, some of them aren't going to sign like huge contracts where they can, you know, afford to not work. But like I say, it just keeps that pressure off. So they don't have to work maybe full time, or they don't have to, you know, they can afford to save a little bit, go on training camps and stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah. And also it brings them together. It's about a team. So it's people living together, and, you know, it's a fixed cost, you know. You give athletes money, and, you know, especially young athletes that aren't, maybe not experienced in managing their own money. They've been living on student loans, which feels like free money, and it certainly isn't. But yeah, it was just, we knew that, you know, and when I say we, myself and Pete Riley, who's sports marketing manager, a global sports marketing manager for running, good friend of mine. It was sort of our dream as athletes to have this set up, and we carried on after I graduated from St. Mary's. Pete and I moved back up north, and Pete worked in a part-time in a running shop. I worked part-time at the university, and we lived the dream. But we also knew what athletes like us needed at that sort of age of 22, 23, 24, where it's challenging. You know, some people go back home, live at home with the parents, fit in with the club environment, waiting all day for the session each evening. And we train mainly in the daytime, you know, in the morning, so they've got more recovery time. And, you know, it started off as a professional setup to the best we could possibly do. And, you know, when you've got the models like the Bowman and things like that out there, you know, those are, we sort of look at that model and say, well, it's successful, and getting people together, training together. And yeah, it's just grown from there, really. And we're into our sixth year this year. And it feels like yesterday when it started. And the dream and the plan was to get somebody to the Olympics by 2020. And we happened to do it by 2016 with Ross Millington. And then, you know, hopefully this year, 2021, we'll have a few of the guys there. There's a few that have got the times and qualified, but obviously got to be selected yet. So, it's been a brilliant journey, and we're just really pleased that we've, I suppose, a lot of professional teams in Europe fold quickly. They don't stand the test of time, because it is a challenge. It is a challenge. You know, it costs a lot of money, and it also needs the right people involved and the right athletes involved that are willing to work together rather than, knock each other down. And you've got to build a culture. And we've got a really strong teamwork and culture at Team New Balance Manchester, which is about training hard, working hard and supporting each other. And even when the athletes do race each other, of course they want to win, but we have a mantra where, you know, you want to beat each other, but you also want to turn around and see your training partner half a second behind you, not a minute behind, you know, and you don't want to see failure. So, yeah, it's a culture that we've bred over time, and it's really good now. We've got athletes, you know, really moved on. First few years was getting GB vests was huge for us. Now we're global finals, European medals, top 10 European cross, things like that, and from a variety of countries across Europe, which is also exciting, you know.
100%. Did you always know that it would be kind of predominantly a marathon group, or is that something that's just kind of happened organically? Because I was kind of thinking about when I first kind of heard of New Balance Manchester, and it seemed like, I guess, like you mentioned, like Ross Millington, like a lot of like 5k, 10k, bit of cross, but now you've got most of the top Brits in the marathon, on the men's side at least, anyway.
Yeah, well, the thing is, it's Team New Balance Manchester. It's got 1500 meter, 800 meter runners right through to marathon. But we decided that a team, if you're in the house or you live locally and you're part of the training setup, you're Team New Balance Manchester. We also have Charlie Hulson and Andy Davies that are Team New Balance,
okay,
but they're not based in Manchester. Right, okay. So they do train with us. I mean, they've been Andy Davies was my second athlete after Ross Millington, and I've been coaching him since day one. So, it is I suppose there's a strong marathon part of that, but that's been a gradual progression, really, through age, training volume, everything else. And, you know, we've got ladies, I suppose, the 8:15, which is Kira and McGeehan and Anna Sylvander. And then we've got, you know, moving through, we've had 5K, 10K, right the way through to marathon, which I suppose gives me a headache. But I think it works really nicely that you can mix and match and also break groups up into smaller chunks and spread the week around a bit differently, so that I can be at the track, you know, I'll be at the track three times this week with three different separate groups, you know, and that works really nicely and allows me to focus on them. But there's always little groups of people in small pockets, two or three training together, or on big days at certain times of year, everyone trains together. But one thing we do have is everybody running together every day and that team ethos, yeah.
Mm, definitely. Just, I don't know if you can share, because obviously you've kind of got your affiliation with New Balance, of course. But I know our listeners love a little kind of shoe debate, and just on the marathon guys, do you mind kind of sharing your opinion on what's kind of happened with the shoes in recent years, and just how it's influenced road running, I guess?
Well, you know, we all know which brand came out with the shoes first, and we all know which brand were leading the way. And then, you know, all the other brands have come back with their own versions, and they're all successful, you know. And New Balance has got a product that our athletes really like, and our athletes have been successful in. And you know, over this last couple of years, from, you know, from Callum Hawkins, Ben Connor, Johnny Mellor, those guys in the marathon and half marathon, down to our track athletes like Kira, like Jake, like Melissa Courtney. So we've got carbon shoes that work really well, and we're happy about that. And you know, there's a lot of research out there. There's responders and non-responders, and you know, people that respond hugely and people that aren't that much different, and actually people that don't even like them, don't like the way they feel, etc. I think, you know, it's been shown across the board now in all events that, you know, they are an advantage, that you're in a disadvantage if you're not wearing them. And I think it's just the way of the sport. It's been a bit old school for me. It took a little bit of time to adjust to it. I didn't really like it at first, but it is the way it is, and you just got to deal with it. And there's a lot of negativity around it, but and there's nothing we can do. The World Athletics, those are the rules, and the brands are making great shoes. And yeah, like I say, New Balance have a great selection of shoes from the Spike right through to their marathon shoe, which we're really proud of.
I think that's it. That's what we've been saying, isn't it? Like, now it's almost been going on long enough that you've just got to accept it. And one good thing that's come from it is the brands, they're competing against each other now. Like, I do feel like they're trying to design, you know, a better shoe year on year, or 6 months, you know, every year now, rather than just sort of waiting 4 years for the Olympics to come around and then sort of restructuring your shoe model. Steve, I don't know if you'll know this, but I was just going to say, like, New Balance is fairly new to track and field. Like, I remember back in, I don't know, 2010 or whatever, it's only like really like Andy Bagley, I remember, being sponsored by it. Do you know, like, what's behind that? Like, what's behind their sort of like new push to track and field? And now they've got huge names, you know, I'd say they're closely like almost on a par with Adidas, and, you know, not far behind Nike in that sense.
So I think, you know, New Balance have always been there. And before you guys were even born, you know, we had superstars wearing New Balance shoes, and, you know, there was world records ran in New Balance shoes, from, you know, even from Carla Canucci wearing New Balance in the marathon, to, you know, some of our track athletes. So every brand goes through waves, I suppose, and you've always got your super strong brands at the top. But New Balance have been around a long, long time, and you know, performance running and athletes have always been at the forefront of the business. And I think there was just a time when New Balance went through a difficult phase, but, you know, they've been really successful with their lifestyle product for years and years, and that's put a lot of money, allowed a lot more money to be invested in the product. And I think our product is, you know, the best out there. And yes, I may be biased, but we've got some fantastic product now, not just in the real high-end performance, the elite stuff and the tier zero, but, you know, for our mass market runner. And yeah, New Balance have just been investing. I think they've invested in staff, they've invested in people that know running, and from a global level and a European level. And we've seen that just a huge investment into it. And I think we've got some great brand ambassadors, but with that, you need the product to back it up. And New Balance have got an excellent product, and I've seen the improvement from when I came in 2014, when I first started the brand. And I remember I was coaching Ross Millington and Johnny Mellor and Andy Davies, and they were with different brands at the time, three different brands. And part of that was them coming across to New Balance, and they were skeptical. They were a bit worried about coming across. And now when we look back at what they were wearing then to what we're wearing now, we really are market leading. And that, like you guys, it can be seen, and you've obviously got your giants there at the top, but we're knocking on the door now, which is really good.
100%. I think you talk about those giants, but they obviously have, like, there's definitely some negative connotations associated with those giants in terms of, not kind of naming specific examples, but in terms of how they perhaps treat their athletes, where you definitely hear some really good things about New Balance in terms of their contracts and in terms of understanding athletes as people as well. So definitely seems like you're working with a great, great brand there. If we're going to go back to a bit of the running, I guess, I guess it's quite difficult because you've got kind of a different event groups there, but we just kind of wanted to know, what's a typical, like, Steve Vernon session, if you like, and is it similar to something you did yourself as an athlete?
You know, like I said, I had a great coach in Dave Turnbull, who really learned a lot through you know, his main resource when he was coaching me was things like the British Milers Club. You know, there wasn't the internet, and certainly wasn't the internet for Dave for a long time. And he got it from books and from the BMC and from talking to other coaches. But he wasn't afraid to experiment. And, you know, Dave always wanted us to be physically strong, and not just, you know, through gym work, but also through creating aerobic monsters. And all his program was always around volume, and not killing ourselves with intensity. So I think I follow that. And, you know, I want to create aerobic monsters, and that means the 8:15 runners need to be aerobic monsters mm-hmm. too. So I think if anyone would sort of talk about the way I train is large volume sessions, but I work on a two session a week rather than three session a week, which usually is Tuesday, Friday with a long run Sunday. Mm-hmm. And you can put a lot more volume in those sessions with the space in between, with, you know, having Wednesday and Thursday easy. So yeah, it's aerobic volume, but it's producing, you know, at the right intensity of the volume that we do. And I think, you know, I do use a lot of science in what I do, especially with newcomers to the group, so they understand the intensities I want them to run at. And it's a long-term development program. I you know, when people come to Team New Balance Manchester, I make it clear I'm not going to make you a superstar in 6 months' time. You've got to invest time in this, and you know, it's going to take time to be really, really good. And if they've come in from a very strength-based program, it's quite easy. But then there's some that come in from different types of programs that take a little bit of time to get used to it. And so, yeah, I mean, if you wanted to, it's very hard to say a particular session, because there's so many, and I suppose it's for different people. But one of the things that, you know, I love is a good long run. And and the thing is, with the long run, you can also play with the long run in terms of it just can be an easy, chill chat. It can be on really hilly terrain. It can be a progressive long run. It can be it can even, you know, be created with a long run and put an element of a fartlek in there and different things. So I like the long run because you can tweak it. And I think it has a place in everyone's schedule. And whenever I've looked at athletes over the years or talked to athletes who might be not running as well as they want to or had a few problems, I often see gaps where they're just missing a long run. And I think that's the key. It's the long run is the glue that holds the rest together. So it's, yeah, that's my favorite. And I liked it as an athlete as well, because I was slow and strong. So it's the only time that I was at my best.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that, and how it kind of is applicable for everyone. And I think just even how, I don't know about your athletes, but just how everyone kind of does it on a Sunday, it seems like even if you're out on your own in the rain, you kind of know that the rest of the UK at least is probably doing the same. So quite nice in that sense.
No, I think so. And I think it's that day of the week as well. It's sort of, you know, traditionally from a normal working week, you come in from your long run, you have your big breakfast, and it's also a massive social thing for us. I mean, not at the moment, it's not, but we'd always make sure we met afterwards, great cafes, chat, chill, and make a long run a real sociable thing. And like you said, everyone's doing it. So it's one day of the week where the team are all together normally. And yeah, we really like it.
Yeah, definitely. You mentioned kind of the lack of social element, but I guess there's also a number of other challenges right now, particularly preparing for the Olympics. So how kind of hard is it to prepare when you don't really have, Matt and I tried to kind of give a preview a few weeks ago of the races coming up, but I guess it might be different for some of your athletes because they can get into the top elite races, but how difficult is it for you as a coach to plan for things that might not happen or might happen?
Yeah, it's a nightmare. I mean, I'm a bit of a control freak in that respect, and I love detail and I love planning, and I have spreadsheets, and, you know, they're just a mess at the moment. And yeah, it's very difficult. It's really challenging. But I think what you have to do is have a long-term goal and look back from there. And, you know, the Olympics is going ahead, and we've been told that a lot of times. So I just work back from there. The races in between, if they're available, perfect. If they're not, we can do things in training or time trials, or you replicate things. But we managed it last year when everything got removed and we had some great performances across the team. In fact, you know, other than one athlete that was injured, we had PBs across the board, which is really great. And yeah, I think it is a challenge. And some of my athletes at a level where they can get into the World Indoor Tour or the Diamond Leagues, etc. And, you know, but we also the marathon runners, where we just did not know what was happening. And planning for a marathon is a bit different than planning for a 1500 meters, you know. And so I think it was hardest for me and the marathoners last year, not knowing what's going to happen. But once London announced their elite only race, I think that was really good for, you know, Charlie Hulson and Johnny Meller. Ross had a problem on his debut, so that was a real shame. But, you know, Andy Davies had to change his plans from running the world long distance mountain running race. And we couldn't get in because it was too late. It was the last minute for London. So Andy had to go and run a solo marathon round Bedford Aerodrome. And
yeah, I saw that.
I think he lapped three quarters of the field to run 2:17 by himself. But that's Andy Davies, he's tough as all boots, and he wanted to run a marathon. And that was a very, very impressive run by himself. So, I think marathon. I think the marathon, and that's been a real challenge. And also, normally, we have the luxury of being able to go away, and we'd normally be away in this time of year with the weather and everything. And, you know, we're not able to at the moment. And so we're all here in Manchester, and a couple of people are trapped when they went home for Christmas, still in their countries because of travel restrictions. So that's a challenge. But long distance coaching isn't ideal. But, you know, if the athletes are professional, do things right, and keep that camp mentality and keep in touch with us all as well. You know, it's not just me they keep in touch with, they keep in touch with the teammates, which is really good as well. So yeah, it's been a challenge for everyone, and I don't want to be a martyr about it. We deal with it, don't we? At the end of the day, it's a global pandemic. There's a lot of people dying in the world, and it's athletics seems quite a small thing in the grand scheme of things, but you know, it's still what we do, and it's still what we're aiming for. So hopefully it's all looking good for the Olympics. And, you know, we've got a big marathon trial at the end of March, which a few of the guys are running as well. So that's the next big thing. And looks like European indoors are going ahead. They've got, hopefully have three or four athletes there as well. So it's going to be a busy couple of months, which is exciting, really. And and if we get some races in between, which, you know, we've been lucky that, been a race in Manchester for indoors, a couple more coming, and marathon wise we'll just go straight through. There's going to be no preparation races for the guys, so it's just straight through to the trial.
Wow, it's interesting you say about like most of your athletes PB. That was almost a theme this year, like anyone who really competed was PBing or just having like, you know, really good races. Because I was about to say, like, did you sense like almost frustration from the athletes at all? But I guess why do you think everyone ran so well? Because your group, but then it was like, just felt like the rankings and everyone was just smashing it this year.
I think people trained for longer, remained consistent for longer because there wasn't as many, you know, some people over race, I think, and then under train in between. Sometimes if you've got to hold on, you've got to train through some races. And I think a lot of people are reluctant to train through races and think they have to taper for everything. And then they end up getting to the end of May, early June, and they're flat as a pancake. Whereas this time races didn't start until June, July, you know, so people had a lot bigger base, but also there was hardly any championship racing. Everything was just go out, do or die, you know? So everyone was going out hard, hanging on for dear life. And you got to remember, everyone was preparing for an Olympics. So they were going to peak. It was a big year.
They were going to peak anyway.
Yeah, it was only, March where the things changed. So everyone had done the winter work ready for an Olympic game. So, you know, everyone was on the top of the game anyway. And those that did get the opportunity to race took every opportunity. And I think sometimes, you know, you go into it thinking, this may be my only opportunity to race this year, so I'm going to make it count. And I think people went in there and made it count. And so there was a few factors in there. And, you know, obviously the shoes were a factor as well, but I don't think they were the only factor. So it was quite good. I think it created a buzz, but I also think it was unfortunate for those semi-elite, those trying to make the next step that just didn't get the same opportunities as the real high-end athlete and the elite athlete. So I think some of them really struggled. And you had a lot of people that sort of drifted by the wayside and had injuries and things like that as well. So it was a tough year for a lot of people. I think we had this blinkered view on the social media world of all people doing well, but, you know, there was a lot of people that suffered last year. So I hope that this year things change and people get their opportunity to race again.
Yeah, definitely. I think that kind of rounds up nicely to the end of part one. We just got a few discussion topics to go for, and in part three. So I guess the listeners will part three, part two. So we'll see you in part two for the listeners.
No, well, we were touching upon the pro groups a little bit, and you know the models that you've almost based off. And it's interesting to say you based off the Bowmans a little bit. We spoke to Mark Scott last weekend, and he has got a very similar setup with the facts that he, you know, he's rooming with people, sharing a house as well. Because we were just going to say, like, is there scope for more groups like New Balance Manchester in the UK? You know, you touched upon the struggles financially that we have in the UK. Like, we're just not as lucrative as in America, or like backed in that sense. And I'm trying to think of like any other groups. I know Brighton do have a group, but I know it's not the same setup as yours, if you like. They're all individuals with the same coach. So it's just, if there's any ideas or like ways that you think in the UK we might see more groups forming, in the, you know, same vein as New Balance Manchester.
Yeah, I mean, it's you've got to have a model that works and work to a real tight budget, a strict budget. And we're lucky that we've made it work. And it's not easy. But, you know, it's you've got to have the right people, I think, to make it a success, because that helps not only the right athletes in terms of talent, but the right people that work together as a team, because it is an individual sport. And you want people that represent the brand well, give the brand credibility. And so you can justify the brand supporting Team New Balance Manchester and putting money into it. But like I said at the beginning, we worked hard at negotiating deals, because the money went into the house. The money went into allowing athletes to be professional athletes. So we wanted to create an environment that allowed athletes to get the best out of themselves and take the pressure of full-time work or looking for jobs, which is always a challenge, you know, at 22, 23, 24. And you know, it's not for everyone. Some people need a full-time job. Some people run better on a full-time job. But we know that the sport is moving on, and rest and recovery is absolutely key, because the level you've got to compete and train at is so high now. So, yeah, New Balance invested in creating this team. And then over time, we've developed, you know, various resources and further funding to help with, you know, sports therapy, massage, physiotherapy. And then, you know, altitude is a big part of what I try and do, and that's really expensive. So we've been able to get some assistance towards the altitude camps from New Balance as well now, so that the budget's expanded there. And yeah, just at year on year, we've justified the investment really. And I think it's possible. I think it just at the start, you've got to be, you know, work with people to build what you're trying to build. And I think Pete and I communicated with a lot of partners and explained to New Balance exactly what we wanted to try and do, and just open that dialogue along the way, but also be honest with the athletes that are investing their time. You know, I've got a lot of people that have moved halfway across Europe to join us, and you know, be honest with them and support them. And it is tough. You've got to have the right environment, the right place. And where we are just outside Manchester, it's a lot cheaper than it would be to set a team like this up in London, for example, because you know, the cost of the house is probably half the price that you pay in Teddington, for example. And but we set it up in an area where they can run from the door. There's disused railway lines, canals, the nearer track, which Stockport Harriers have been a brilliant support to us and allowing us track access. You know, we're near Manchester Airport, so you can get to races really easily. You know, Manchester indoor track. We've got great sports medicine services with Dr. John Rogers, and we have our, you know, a masseur that's Vicky Hales, that lives literally up the road from us, who's almost a team member herself, not just a sports therapist. And, you know, we have a team of physiotherapists that we use as well. And I think we just built,
it's just grown.
Yeah, you just build an empire around it, really, of the right people. And it's not like a governing body where you have to report in to different people. It's our team. I get a lot of buy-in from the athletes, and, you know, and they know it's theirs as well. It's not just my team or New Balance's team. They're a big part of this. And you know, I really empower them to have a leadership role. And if I'm not there and there's a big key session, this one of them might be holding the stopwatch for another one, or they're out on an altitude camp, or they're traveling to races together, because I can't be at everything now. And I think that's what the team is about, so that it can work itself. And It's not so reliant on me. So yeah, I wish I could sort of put it into words, but we've just grown over time and justified more investment in it. And and we don't sort of openly recruit. I wait for athletes to ask or be interested. We looked into recruitment in the first year, but I think people were very scared about the team and scared about what people would think, and there was almost a bit of animosity amongst some of the clubs as though I was going to start poaching. So we just left it. Hopefully the athletes that run well is enough publicity and promotion for people to say, do you know what, I want to be a part of that. And you use social media to tell the story and people can see what we're about. I've got good people in the team, and I think along the way people just say, do you know what, I'm willing to invest and be a part of that. And I've been really impressed by some of our foreign athletes that have reached out. And, I'll use one in terms of a Swiss guy called Jonas Ray. And he reached out to me and wrote an email, and he'd done his work. He'd done his research, and he decided that the group and me as the coach was right for him. And would I consider him? But I was just so impressed by the fact that he wanted to come to the group and the setup. He didn't once ask about, do I get paid? What do I get free? It was about, I can run fast in that environment. I want to be part of that. And that's what really impresses me. And because if you want to be a millionaire, don't be a distance runner. Trust me. It's tough. And, some people are, have to live very frugally, but it's what a journey it is for people. I think, life's too short. If you really want to have a crack at it, why not? And the things that the guys have done, they might not have much money in the pocket, but they traveled the world and met some amazing people. When you can stand on the start line of major championships with you were looking at them on Instagram as your heroes, a few years previously, and now you're competing with them. And I think that's the journey. I want people to enjoy the journey because there's so many ups and downs, as you both know, with running. I remember a famous coach saying, you'll only remember on one hand how many really, really good races you ran, the ones that you really nailed. Yeah. And it's brutal, but it's a journey that I hope that people that when they leave Team New Balance Manchester, when their running careers are ended, they can look back at it and say, that was an amazing part of my life, and I really enjoyed it while I was there. And that's what it's all about. And I have a mantra in the team. It's cheesy, but my guys all remember it well, is a happy runner is a fast runner. And we create an environment where people are happy and having a great time. And don't get me wrong, they have to work bloody hard, but we have a good time while we're doing it. And if you're happy in your training and obviously your home life and everything else has to be happy too, but you'll usually run fast.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I really like kind of what you stand for in that sense, in the culture. I was about to ask, one of my next questions was just going to be like, what sort do you look for a certain type of athlete? But it sounds like you more just care about the way they almost like value training, the way they value, the process of getting better rather than their actual sort of, I don't know, physical makeup or their, whether they're a speed runner, their sort of background in the sport.
Yeah. No, we of course look at talent. We don't just take anyone on. They've got to, they've got to be represent the brand and be looking at making, global championships and being the best they can be. But we don't just, we're not looking at the next English schools winner, even though we will look at English schools winner. We're looking at people that are going to fit with the brand, fit in with the team environment, be willing to work their arse off, but also have a smile on the face along the way. And they've got to have the right attitude. We don't have people that are mood hoovers in the team, and if they do, they get their arses kicked by all of us. And because it's tough. I mean, there's days like today where it's just torrential rain and you've got to go and do the work, and you want people to be saying, well, it's only rain, let's get on with it, rather than, oh, do we have to, And I think, we try and create a culture where there's positivity and yes, I don't expect people to bounce out of bed every morning, especially when they've banged out a massive session the day before, but I just expect a good attitude and being positive and being tough and getting on with it. And that's the type of people we look for. They've got to have talent, but also people that I see that have got longevity and are willing to invest the time and they'll come out good. And we're seeing that through Team New Balance Manchester athletes, that it might take them a year or two, but they really move on and reach the full potential. And that's what we're about. And it's been an amazing 5 or 6 years, and long may it continue.
Definitely. What do you reckon? How do the challenges differ now from, so obviously you're coaching the guys now, so you can see the sort of challenges they may have, you know, have in running. Is it any different to when you were competing, you know, say 10, 15 years ago when you were like in your prime? Is there any sort of different challenges that they're facing now that you weren't, or you were facing challenges that they don't have to even worry about now?
Yeah, I mean, I think the club structure
seems like it's moved on heaps.
Yeah.
Has it actually, in the sense of, you know, competing and training like you did?
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't a superstar on the track. I was a good cross-country runner. I had a few quid mountain running and cross-country, but I wasn't a track guy. And, you know, so I didn't see it the way, you know, I never got the opportunity to be a full-time athlete and be competing at the highest level. I always had a job. And I think that was good for me to always have a job throughout my running career. But I had a really good club structure. And I think that's vitally important for people who aren't at the level to go into a professional setup or get sponsorship and funding, or, you know, I think a really good club structure. And Stockport Harriers had that. And I was very lucky that my coach, Dave Turnbull, created a hard-working but have fun culture. So I was lucky in that respect. And we had a lot of people that would come and join us at Stockport Harriers and when I was an athlete, you know, and come and we'd be open, and the sessions would, you know, I remember banging out 2400s with the likes of Stuart Stokes, who was an Olympic steeplechaser. You know, we had Pete Riley there. We had Andy Jones, who was a world championship marathoner, joining in. We had the Norman brothers, you know, Pat and Jack Martin, who both internationals, and there'd be a group of 8 to 10 guys just working hard on a Tuesday night, you know? And
It's interesting you say that, because I feel like that's almost, I know it still exists, but it doesn't exist quite as big as it used to, the club structure, you know, the importance of it, because I just feel like everyone is almost going down the route of, if they work full time, they're trying to train on their own around their own sort of job and their own schedule. Or they're working part time. So they, you know, they're, like you say, they're training during the day, a little bit like your guys are doing now. And I do feel like that was almost like it. It was just key, because I just feel like back in the day, you would just, you know, I know at my club, you'll go down on a Tuesday or a Thursday and there would just be, you know, there's just men like thrashing around the track.
Yeah. Well, I live for that.
I don't really see it as much anymore.
Well, you know, you've got some great clubs that are doing it, you know, the Tonbridge, you know, with Mark Hookway, but there's also great university setups. So, you know, Cardiff with James D, you've got... Andy Henderson in Leeds. You've got Luke and his group in Birmingham. And they're doing it that way because some of those guys, you know, are right on the cusp of being elites or getting funding staying in the university structure, because it's a great way to continue your running career, because you've got the facilities, you've got the like-minded people around you. And so, you know, I wish the club structure, you know, I didn't train in the day, but I loved it. And because it never seemed a chore. You'd go on a Tuesday night and, you know, it'd be, back then we'd do Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday morning. Thursday was always a lighter session. I learned from the American structure that I just couldn't do three sessions a week. So it'd be a low end threshold. But Tuesday night, I lived for it. I lived for getting down there and the banter in the changing rooms. And, you know, it was ruthless. And that was my friendship group as well. It didn't seem like going doing a session. And there was no... We were made to be very humble. Dave Turnbull would just kept us all grounded no matter who you were. And, you know, I remember being in the changing rooms on one particular night, and it was like a week after winning the national for the first time. And, you know, it was a massive thing down at the club. And I was just talking to we called it the forum. And I was talking to all the boys in the changing room and going on about it, as you do. And Dave came in the changing rooms. I mean, I'd swear on this podcast, by the way.
He walks
into the change rooms and he goes, "Is Vernon still going on about that fucking national win?" He said, "That was last week." And he used to always call it History Channel. He said, "That's History Channel. Get out there and get your warm-up done." And we all laughed, but it was like, you've won the national, well done.
Yeah.
But the intercounties are in another week's time, so let's get going. And, you know, it was... we were kept very humble, and I think that was part of it. And I think there's certain people think they've made it, But you're not made it until you stood on the Olympic podium. That's when you really, really made it. You know what I mean? And I think we need to get back to just working hard together, being humble and staying humble and not getting above our station, because there's always the new kid on the block coming around the corner, and there's always, you know, exciting new groups. There's always brilliant emerging new coaches, and you've got to be on your toes all the time. So, and at the end of the day, it's also only sport. It's only running. And in the grand scheme of things, it's what we do. It's what people's jobs are. But we need to remind ourselves sometimes that it is just running. And, you know, when your health and family is more important. And sometimes I think we take it too seriously. And I'm somebody that took it too seriously at times and, you know, ran myself into the ground, got injured. I've had sleepless nights over coaching. But sometimes I just step back, reset, and remind myself why I do this, and because I love the sport. And yeah, there's loads of ups and downs, but you've just got to, when you get knocked down, you've got to get back up quick and go again. It's as simple as that. And it's brutal sometimes and you hate the sport, but the quicker you learn from your mistakes or your failure and then just get back going again, the better. And I think that's what the club structure and the group I had in Stockport really helped me in learning about that. And yeah, it was ruthless. The banter was outrageous, but it was an enjoyable thing. You'd go to the track and no matter what the weather, you were all suffering out there together. And yeah, it was a culture we had, and we'd go and have curry and a few pints together at the weekend, and you know, after races celebrate it. But we celebrated and then we moved straight on, and that was what Dave was great at. And we had some great relay performances as a club, winning Mansfield National Cross Country Relays, National Six Stage when they wrote me back in as a veteran, and, you know, and national medals as teams. And, you know, I love that club structure. And I think that is what athletes miss out on nowadays. And that's what we try and create in Team New Balance Manchester. It's our own little club, you know?
I do feel like that's almost what's been lacking, you know, the past few years, past 10, 15 years, is that club. You know, that club structure, like you were saying. And so that's almost why like team sports do so well, is because you're going to the club every other night training, and you know, you're just having a good time and you don't really think about the training as much. And I've almost felt like athletes are trying to go alone too much these days.
Yeah. Especially it's tough. The ones it's tough on your own.
Yeah. Especially the ones who like aren't, you know, elite, they're sub elite. They're thinking they have to do, you know, a set program in order to get elite. And I just sometimes think, no, if you were just to train with people and, you know, bond with people, he'd probably bring, you know, a much better performance out of you.
Yeah, there's almost like the gaps like kind of really grown between, you've got this kind of, you're almost like your park run culture and you've got your like elite running culture, and then there's guys that are kind of trying to live the elite lifestyle, and then that kind of club aspect, apart from maybe juniors, that I guess Matt and I relate to a lot, because it kind of seems a lot like what you were describing, in terms of that kind of show up and like work hard sort of thing, maybe without the pints and things, maybe for some people, but yeah, it's almost like I kind of haven't really had that as a senior at all, it's interesting. And I don't know, I guess like you say, there's a lot of places where it does happen, but I think there's not as much.
The North seems
so people don't.
Yeah, but you think you've got to go out and create it. Like if you want it, then, and if you haven't got, you know, myself and Pete Riley, yes, we had the backing of New Balance, but we've created Team New Balance Manchester, and we asked and we told them, you know, how we would like to do it and how it would look. And we had to prove ourselves, you know, it wasn't, oh, here's a load of money, enjoy yourselves. It was right. Well, we can help with this. It's a business plan and a model that we grew. But, you know, if you've not got that opportunity in the UK, you've got to go out and find it and creating it. You know, too many people want to moan about it and moan what they haven't got. Well, you know, but everyone's got a pair of running shoes. Everyone can, you know, meet up. And, you know, it's things like make it more fun and exciting. I mean, when head torches, we found out about head torches, it was like a revelation, because we hated pounding the roads. And then we used to meet with head torches and, you know, run wherever. And those were little exciting things on a dark evening in the winter where running's normally boring. We were crashing around and climbing into parks we shouldn't be. And, you know, there's so many stories that I've got that, but it was a great culture. And I think that's what you've got to create. You've got to create an environment that's performance orientated, but also having fun and a good time as well. And no matter what level you're at, you know, you see the most successful football teams out there, they're having a good time while also working hard. And you can see that when there's flow and trust amongst the team and the players, they're doing well. And yeah, it needs a good leader. And you know, I've worked hard. I'm constantly learning as the leader and manager of this team. I can't sit on my laurels. I've constantly got to raise my game. And how can I be better at what I do? How can I further motivate and inspire and you know, help my athletes become the best they can be? And, you know, Team New Balance Manchester isn't for everyone. And but it's the guys that have been in it and are in it have usually come out with it with a really positive experience. And I hope that message gets passed on, you know.
Thanks very much for coming on there, Steve. I think that kind of wraps us up. But yeah, thank you for your time, basically.
No, thank you guys, and really keep up the good work, because podcasts like this that are getting news out there and giving people the chance to learn about the sport during challenging times has been really useful. So really appreciate it, guys. Keep getting exciting characters, because I've enjoyed the last couple of episodes, really have.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.